Recording is on.
Great, everyone. Welcome to today's meeting, March 24th of the Credentials Community Group. Today, we are going to have an event report out of the Thoughtful Biometrics Report by John Callahan and Kalia Identity Woman. Then we have Reasons to Celebrate, and the DID Working Group as well. The DID candidate recommendation is official, and so we're going to hear a few words from Brent Zundel, who's the co-chair of the DID Working Group, and Manu Sporny, who has probably single-handedly, like, made this happen. I mean, along with everyone else. I don't mean, like, not to discredit other folks, but, you know, definitely Manu is the hardest working person in the community. So we're going to hear some words about that and have a little bit of celebration. And then if we've got time left over, and if we don't, no problem. I thought it would be really interesting to see if we could have a little bit of a community discussion or feedback based on the pair of meetings that the CCG and Solid team had 2 weeks ago. So that's our plan for today. Okay, IP note. Anyone can participate in these calls. However, any contributors to any CCG work items must be members of the CCG with full signed IPR agreements. That basically means that if you contribute any intellectual property, you need to sign the appropriate legal documentation so that there's no issues with who owns the contributions of the CCG. It's really easy to sign. It's really easy to join. You can just go to the Credentials Community Group. I'll put the link in here. And you do not need to be a paid corporate member of the W3C to join the community group, this community group. But you do need to sign up for a W3 account in order to sign the IPR agreement. I'm adding a little bit of clarity here because I've learned that with the working with the CCG 101, it's not so clear to new folks what needs to be done and who can be a member, etc. Okay, call notes. These minutes and an audio recording of everything said on this call is archived at the CCG github.io meetings URL. It's also very easy to create minutes based on these thanks to the work of Manu and Amy Guy and Wayne and some other folks, also Kim. So if you are interested in training up on how to create minutes, I'm happy to personally walk you through it. It takes me about 5 minutes to do it after the meetings. And we could use some help. We use IRC to cue speakers during the call as well as take minutes. We also, because we have this amazing CG bot that kind of bridges the gap between the official, I won't say the official, between the OG IRC, which I'll put in the link, and the Jitsi chat. You can chat or comment in either place and we'll get it into the record. If you want to add yourself to the queue and if you want to say any words or make a comment, you'll want to add yourself to the queue. You want to add Q+. And if you want to make a comment about what you're, or make a note about what you're going to comment, you can say Q+ and then put some notes. Also, in order to be automatically included in the attendees of the minutes, type present plus, and that's the plus sign, in either the Jitsi chat or the IRC. This meeting is held by voice, not IRC, so if off-topic IRC comments might be deleted. Okay, scribe selection, and Manu has so graciously been scribing the pre-meeting intro. Let me ask first, do we have any volunteers to scribe? It's very fun. It's very easy. All you have to do is type, do the best you can. If you've never done it, Feel free to go ahead and try it out. And there are lots of folks, Manu and other folks who have done it, who can help you out. So any volunteers? Coyote?
Coyote, yes, I'm happy to volunteer.
Oh, great, Coyote, great. Okay, great. Okay, so. Okay, I think I got your name right. Great, thank you so much, Coyote, for scribing.
I should always prefix with the current speaker, right?
Yes, what you can do is you can, so like right now I'm speaking, you could say Heather Vesant, like Manu was doing, but if, in the presentations, you can just do dot, dot, dot. If you want to, you know, if the same person is speaking and you want to hit enter and go to type another line. So as long as it's the same speaker, you can just do dot, 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 and then a new speaker, when it changes.
Great.
Thank you so much. Is this your first time scribing?
It is, yes.
Okay, great. So other scribe experts jump in to assist in a gentle way if it looks like it needs to happen. Okay. All right. So announcements and reminders. Looking at announcements and reminders. Oh, wait a second. Did I forget introductions? I did. My bad. Okay. Let's do introductions and reintroductions. Do we have anyone new on the call who would like to introduce themselves? Do I see any new folks? Maybe you want to be quiet. Anyone want to reintroduce themselves? Sure, Matteo.
Hi, sorry, I didn't hear when you first asked. I'm Matteo Colley. I worked at Highland. I was in the learning machine team before. I work with Julien, who's here, and Chris Wink, who's also here. Happy to join the group.
Great, welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah, me too. I just wanted to say hi again. I've been attending this meeting maybe once or twice the past year, and now I'm trying to come more regularly too. So, yeah. Hi. My name is Julien, and I'm also at Highland Credential.
Hi, Julien. Great to meet you. Thank you for introducing yourself. Do you guys have a link to the work you're doing or anything that we could check out what you're working on or stalk you a little bit?
We've mostly been working with BlockCerts, so with Kim previously, Anthony Running, and then again, obviously Chris Wink. So yeah, but mostly BlockCerts. I guess it's not maybe well known, but it's known in this area.
Yeah, fantastic. Thank you. Is there anyone else new that would like to introduce themselves? Or any reintroductions? Anyone that has some new information or they haven't introduced themselves in a while?
I'd like to hear from Jack, if he wouldn't mind reintroducing himself.
Oh, sure, Manu. So I thought I'd be presenting today, but John Callahan, CTO of Viridium. I know many of you, and I'll be talking with Kalia today about the workshop we held 2 weeks ago.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for that intro. I was thinking about calling on you as well, but I thought maybe you'd do an intro during the talk. So thank you, Manu, for that. Anyone else? I feel like I kind of want a little bit of a reintroduction by Taken, if possible, if you're up for it. And I'll tell you why, because in the CCG 101 calls that we're working on, your really fantastic intro to SSI came up and I hadn't seen it before and I thought it was really great. So,
happy to say hi real quick. And sorry, I've got a little background noise. Taylor Kendall, I'm with Learning Economy Foundation. And have been diving deep down the SSI rabbit hole over the last few years. So it's been fun seeing the flurry of emails these past few days. A lot to chew on in a really good way. So we work mostly sort of at the intersection of education infrastructure and workforce development across a number of ecosystems. So yeah, thanks Heather for that. And let's keep the momentum going. It's been a fun ride.
Absolutely. Thank you. I think it's, we're in a really interesting space in the community. I think today is definitely a milestone or last week when that email got sent out about the candidate recommendation. Okay. Thanks everyone for those introductions and reintroductions. Announcements and reminders. I had opened that. Here we go. Does anyone have any announcements or reminders?
Yep. Internet Identity Workshop is coming up April 20th to 22nd. If you don't have a ticket yet, go get one. And if you are worried about price and accessibility, we're committed to doing that. Supporting folks being able to attend, so reach out. And it's best to reach out to my main email address, which is not the one subscribed to this list. I lost actually some inquiries because of that. So if my email address for is just Kalia@identitywoman.net. The one that's on this list is Kalia-ID@identitywoman.net because it's sort of the mailing list address. So just making it really clear, the best doorway to knock on my door about accessibility for IAW.
Thanks, Kalia. I know that you and IAW has been very good at making IAW accessible to folks. So thank you for that. Okay, let's do an update on progress and action items. Okay, so looking at this, I wanted to, there's a couple things I put on here that I wanted to kind of give an update on. So the first one is CCG 101 update to regular meeting. I just wanted to alert the community that we are having regular CCG 101 meetings on Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Pacific. What's happened is that the group of about six of us that are meeting are creating an intro to the CCG type of presentation that, we will then give to the CCG in May. And the goal of that work is to, take some immediate actions and create content that will increase the, comprehensive understanding of what the CCG is. And it's not just about the work we're doing. It's about orientation. And part of that orientation is to put a regulator on the fire hose of some of the content. And I think that the recent conversations about what is self-sovereign identity is a really great example of, just like getting the fire hose in the face and that kind of interaction or that kind of introduction to the CCG can be a bit overwhelming to people that are just trying to come in and, kind of get their bearings and their understandings. Whereas those of us responding and communicating in that thread and in those threads, boy, are we just really being nitpicky and precise. And both of those perspectives are important. Someone cannot get to the point of having or commenting in a precise way on some of the things that we're doing until they have a solid general understanding. And so that is what those of us in the CCG 101 are working to create. So if you're interested in participating, I'd like to invite you to join us. This is our first action. I'm very much a fan of trying to find a project for us to jointly work on, to have a deliverable. And so, the entire group of folks is, included in that. And other folks in the community, you might get folks reaching out to you, asking you about information. I know someone's going to reach out to you, Manu, as kind of like an interview or to, you know, talk to you to get the background. And so we're using this exercise both as a research operation to learn ourselves and to document that learning so that we can, share it with other folks. Manu, I see that you're on the queue. You want to?
Yeah, it was actually to speak to that email I got. So, first off, like, great. Like, it's fantastic. You know, work that, you know, we now have a group that's working on CCG 101. So, like, super supportive of that happening. When I got that email, I panicked because I was like, oh no, this is really important. And I know that by the end of the day, it is going to be 5 pages off my email thing, right? So just a heads up. I don't even remember who sent me the email yet. I should. But stay on me. And the other thing I wanted to make sure is that we also consult the group at large. So, you know, I hope a part of that interview process is asking the mailing list who's got, you know, input on stuff like that. So I want to make sure that, certain people in the community, you know, hopefully they're not put in the critical path because I'm going to slow things down. Anyway, that's all I wanted to mention is stay on me. I will try to respond. It's very important, but at the same point, you know, some of us are being like absolutely crushed under our current workload.
I completely understand and respect that. And I think one of the things that I keep in mind when I interview and work with a lot of executives is I know your time is very important. And so I try to find the least, intense touch interaction. And oftentimes it's not easy, but once you can get like half an hour, someone can just say things and other people, you know, you just need that time to download. Manu, would it be easier for us to invite you to our meeting for maybe half an hour or sometime next week? I can follow up with you if you think that would be a way to best utilize your time.
Plus one to that, I think getting something on folks' calendars forces them to make time, right? Versus asking politely. So, yes, please, plus one to a calendar invite and blocking something out on a calendar.
Sounds great. Then you'll be talking to the entire team. I also want to address your other comments about getting feedback from the community. 100% agree. Another one of my ways of working is, I've realized that it's easier to get feedback once you already have something to get feedback on. So our creation of this intro to the CCD presentation, which we're all going to share, like I will spearhead and, you know, and be like the stopgap measure and be like the safety net. But I really want to empower the folks in that team to feel comfortable and confident with the material and with presenting it not only to this community, but to their own communities. So I think that's going to be an iterative process. So we're going to do our first draft. We're going to present it. We'll present it. I put it on the calendar for, let's see. We gave ourselves 6 weeks to do it. So we are scheduled to do the intro to CCG at the CCG call, which will be back on Tuesday, May 4th at 9 a.m. Pacific. And then on that day, we're also going to do a part, not a part two, like we're going to do it again at 2 o'clock Pacific, to try to hit the Asia Pacific. We do have Asia Pacific participants in that group. So, that 2 p.m. Slot works better for them. So we're going to do the same presentation twice on May 4th. And then we'll be open to feedback from the community on what we can add, what we can change and things like that. I just want to reiterate everyone that this is the baby step introduction orientation to this community. This is not, like let's discuss the nuances of self-sovereign identity definition. That's overwhelming to new people. So great. Okay. I wanted to give you guys an update on that because there's some really exciting stuff happening with that. The next steps in the solid meeting, you know, we just had a couple great, it seemed like the meetings that we had last time we met, which is 2 weeks ago, that those solid meetings were really good. If we've got time today or maybe at a future meeting, I would like to get feedback from the community on your thoughts about this, thoughts of engaging. I know the confidential storage group had some feedback in one of their meetings, like the right after that. And it was really interesting. And there were some ideas that, that the confidential storage is the place where we should engage in solid, but I don't want to limit that as the only place. So, and then I also wanted to make sure there was an opportunity for the broader CCG to give feedback. So, I don't know if we'll have time today, but so this is like the last thing on the agenda if we've got time. So maybe in the back of your mind, think about if you can remember, because a lot of stuff has happened in the last few days, weeks, think about your comments and thoughts on the solid CCG presentations and collaboration. The last thing I wanted to bring up was this issue 185, CHAPI interoperability, TASI. It's a proposed work item. Manu, you submitted this. I was just wondering, if you guys wanted to just talk about it in the meeting and if you wanted to speak some words to it.
Sure. So I submitted it on behalf of Ganesh. So Ganesh is, leading, this particular work item. For those of you that are not familiar with CHAPI, it stands for the Credential Handler API. And it's the thing that basically, if you're using a web browser, it's the thing that moves credentials from like an issuer into your digital wallet and from your digital wallet into a verifier site. So the interoperability test suite is there to help implementers understand if they're following the pre-standard correctly. Like it literally drives a web browser to go and pick up a credential from one place and then go and deliver it to another place. And it takes screenshots along the way. It tests to make sure it's getting the right thing. And it's meant to be a measure on how well all the implementers are implementing to, you know, kind of the code that exists right there. So it's one of those weird esoteric things that developers really depend on to tell them whether or not there's true interoperability here or, you know, or not. It has been, pushed forward. You know, it came to be, during the, DHS Silicon Valley Innovation Program, last year. It has been a fairly useful tool, on how we could do interop for CHAPI. And there's a very strong desire to take that and hand it over to the credentials community group so that the CCG can be the steward of that work. So it's not owned by any particular vendor or any particular government or something like that. So there's a strong desire to put it in a neutral body like the CCG where it could then be further incubated and then eventually taken on the standards track. That's it.
Thanks, Manu. Does anyone want to make any comments or anything about it? Okay. I think that as long as it hits the requirements for a work item, I see no reason not to move forward with it. So yeah, thanks for that submission, Manu. And that made me realize that last week we had there was the Silicon Valley Innovation, a lot of meetings for that. I was wondering if, and one of my goals is to share some of that knowledge back here in this community, but is there anyone who attended those meetings or presented those meetings that would like to kind of talk about what happened in them? If so, add yourself to the queue. I'm kind of jumping out of order here. I think I meant to mention this back with the Marcus. You're up.
Yes, so I was one of the participants. This was a so-called PlugFest, where a number of companies that are participating in the Silicon Valley Innovation Program presented their work. The Silicon Valley Innovation Program, also known as SVIP, is a program by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security to apply the technologies that all of us here are working on, the IDs and verifiable credentials, to concrete scenarios or concrete use cases that the U.S. government has. And there are a number of startups in this program, and they were divided in two groups. One group was working on supply chain related use cases, import of raw materials to the U.S. And the other group is working on personal credentials related to immigration and citizenship status. So, for example, the permanent resident card. And this has been ongoing for a while. There was already a PlugFest last year, and so this was the second one. And the purpose of this was, on one hand, to demonstrate interoperability. I would say this was the most important motivation of the event and of the program itself, because the way it was set up was that those startups that are participating in the program, they don't just show what they are working on by themselves, but they actually demonstrate concrete interoperability in practice using some of the technologies and protocols. For example, Chappie, that Manu mentioned before, those were demonstrated using different implementations from different vendors applied to one of these use cases of the U.S. government. So, for example, we were able to demonstrate that, let's say, a digital permanent resident card is issued using software from one vendor. Then the card is issued into a wallet provided by a second vendor, and then credential from that wallet is presented to a verifier using software from a third vendor. And that's really cool, of course, because it demonstrates what standards are for. And the event, there were two days, it was a three-day event. 2 days were with a more limited audience, a more limited group to do actual interoperability testing and demonstration of interoperability testing results. And then the third day was an event with a broader audience where, again, the companies who are participating in the program were demonstrating what they were working on and explaining their vision of interoperability. And also, there's also a strong focus on trying to communicate the business value of all of these technologies and what we're working on. So to really show that this is not a set of proof of concepts anymore. We're beyond that. We're already at a point now where these technologies, deeds and verifiable credentials and so on, they are used for solving concrete problems. And, therefore, this event, I think it was really cool. It was very successful, and there are some slides and materials that are publicly available that I think Anil, John from DHS already posted to the list.
Thanks for that overview, Marcus. Anyone else on the call want to make any comments? Juan, you're up.
I just wanted to mention that the plugathon, the interoperability test suites and demonstrations, and the API used for those demonstrations is a CCG work item, and I think the CCG community is welcome to pay attention to those repos, chime in on issues, give input, that design process, that sort of iteration of the API underlying the plugathon, is very much ongoing. It's not like a one-time thing. So that would be my only, comment. That's it.
That's actually a really great comment, Juan. And one of the things I have on my to-do for a future session is to have some introductions to some of these, you know, technologies and repos that were created by the SVIP cohort, like the the VC-HTTP API, which I didn't actually really know what it was until those calls. And then I was like, wow, this is actually really cool. So I'm sure there's other things as well, that will be interesting for the rest of the community. And so my goal is to, over the course of the next few months, to, you know, have some of those folks and some of the folks that, presented, at the Interoperability Plug Fest to come more specifically present at the CCG. So if you have questions or you are specifically interested in an angle on that for us covering it that the community will be interested in, get in touch with me. Okay, Adrian, you are on the queue. You're up.
Can you hear me?
You are very faint for me.
No.
I think that's good. Yeah, that's better. Thank you. Okay. Yes, that's better. Thanks, Adrian.
Oh, okay. Just something to think about. It's very hard. There's a huge amount of work that's going on, particularly under the SVIP program, and it's very hard to keep track of what software libraries are available to do which pieces. I know a lot of the stuff is available, but it is not, at least I haven't figured out, any particular structure or organization to what is available. So I'm suggesting that it might be, a not terribly difficult CCG item for us to maintain some kind of a, I hate to use the term registry because we use it for everything in this bunch, but some way, some kind of wiki, where people can post the actual code that they are willing to share. Thank you.
Adrian, can I just probe a bit into your request? Like, is this for general? Is this to like understand the non-technical applications and have the code available to you, available in like a single place?
Well, we've had discussions as to, you know, in the various work groups about whether we need example implementations or reference implementations, which is a very different thing, apparently. And also, of course, commercial implementations. And so all three of them can be open source or free software, and they serve different purposes. So for example, one purpose would be, if my project wanted to join a plug fest, by adding a particular piece of code to something that we're already doing, how do I know, what that entails? But they're obviously, you know, everything all the way up to putting out a commercial product with, by fixing some bugs. Anyway, that's kind of what I mean. It's not a fully formed thought. It's just a suggestion.
No, that was kind of the reason I wanted to probe is because we had a similar request in the CCG 101 calls, which were, I mean, by new developers coming and not new to being a developer, new to being our community developers, trying to figure out and orient themselves on just the stuff that we're doing here. And so we're trying to figure out, like, as part of the intro stuff, like a pathway of like, I don't want to say like a course, but you know, like education with resources and stuff where, you know, new engineers to this community could be, you know, could more easily self-learn what we're doing here. And so I'm just wondering if the solution that we explore for that might also apply to your question and be applied to new stuff that's being developed in this community.
Yeah, well, just to have a last word, I think as a community, we all benefit the more investment comes into our work. And that's not an original quote, but it's something that was shared with me by Wayne. I don't mind crediting for it. And so we need to make it as easy as possible for people to do this.
Okay, great. Mike, you're up next.
In theory, it let me off mute there. It's a great comment by Adrian there, and you know, and Heather, obviously that does go back a lot to the one-on-one discussions. Having gone through some of that kind of discovery myself, I've been kind of keeping a running list, but I think having a, you know, list of that, those kinds of reference implementations, for lack of a better way of putting it, or various open source implementations of related code, I think is an important thing to help onboard folks. And also to reduce duplication of effort, get more eyes on, you know, from a security standpoint, especially since many of these things are calling back into, you know, cryptography related libraries, et cetera, right? So there's more eyes is better in this case, right? You know, to my knowledge, the most complete as far as like being able to get someone up and running with, you know, VCs, DIDs, et cetera, there's really three implementations, one in Rust, one in Go, and then one in TypeScript. And so Rust is DIDKit. Go is your Hyperledger Aries stuff. And then Transmute's VC.js is probably the most complete on the TypeScript side of things. So there's at least three languages to kind of get up and going. It'd be nice eventually if we wind up with, you know, some other kind of really common, you know, programming languages stacks in the mix. But to my knowledge, that's the kind of three main ones. This is also not to call out that there aren't huge contributions that you should go look at and leverage, right? You know, Manu and Digital Bazaar have done a huge amount on the JSON LD and the underpinnings there, the Chappie side of things, right? So there's a lot of other things in the mix, right? Matter on BBS Plus. So, you know, be aware that then these implementations are calling out into other things as well, right? So, Manu, I don't know if you've got other thoughts or are aware of other libraries that I might not be calling out or mentioning. So,
great, thanks, Mike. Manu, you're on the queue.
Yeah, just to follow up on what Mike said. I think part of the problem is like even the people that are implementing don't know what's out there. So we absolutely like, you know, absolutely, Adrian, we need to have some kind of, you know, census of the libraries that are out there. In fact, we just sent a mail to, you know, the DHSS VIP mailing list saying, I don't know who's using what out there, but we should really figure that out, right? So there are implementations and there are newer ones each day. And the great news here is that it's hard for us to keep track of it, meaning that there are more and more coming out. So we definitely need that list. It, I believe, you know, becomes a part of like the interoperability work to be able to talk about all the different implementations for all the different languages. Plus one, we absolutely need it. And this community seems like it's well positioned to do that work as long as we have a volunteer.
Great. Thanks, Manu. Kalia, you're up next.
So some of you may know I publish a weekly newsletter update with InfoMiner about the industry. And we've had sort of in the back of our minds a conversation about doing a survey of all the companies who claim they're doing SSI to figure out what they're actually doing. So this may align, like I would like, if we do a survey, to have it ask some of the questions that are being surfaced here, and figure out how we share the results, back here. But I don't want, I'm hesitant to like volunteer him without him hearing what I'm volunteering him for, but I'm just floating it out there that we've thought about doing this in the coming months.
Kalia, you could propose this as a work item. Just throwing that out there.
That's a great idea. I'll take it back to my two-person team before I do anything, but thank you.
Yeah, I'm just saying like that might be a way for you to get additional resources or participants, especially with like a non-technical work item, to be able to put it back into the community. Juan, you're up next. And then this is going to, I'm going to close the queue because we've had a lot of great conversation, but we need to get to the main event.
For sure, for sure. And, I'm hoping to talk about this later at Diff Finra later today, but, I think the Vahapi test suite, the sort of self-testing page, which, went live quite recently, might be a good way to, insofar as the VC HTTP API test suite, proves conformance to specific specs. It gives people something to link to say, look, our public testnet, you know, test harness is passing the test to prove we implemented this spec testably. So I think that might be a sort of neutral way that people could PR in their config files to that test suite. And then the test suite would sort of be, I mean, I guess it's not exactly the same because what they're showing might not be the same thing that's in the repo for use as a sample implementation. But it is a sort of starting point. It is a sort of public self-governing registry, perhaps. But yeah, that's just an idea, but that's it.
Hey Mike, can we hold this? I just want to give us time for the main event, if that's okay. Okay, thank you. Okay, thanks everyone for this great conversation. Clearly, we could talk more about that in the future, and maybe we should at a future meeting. So now I'd like to hand it over to Kalia and John to talk about the Thoughtful Biometrics event and what you guys learned and what it was like there.
Sure, Kalia.
Yeah, hi. And then I'm going to share my screen. No, just the window. That one. Okay. Can you see it? Yes.
Yes.
Oh, look, my screen is like an avatar on the thing. So, so we hosted this event, March 8th, 10th, and 12th. So the experiment of having half day. So I'll go into the agenda. So we had 3 days and it was 3 hours of open space, which is where the participants show up and co-create the agenda live the day of the event. And so we had three hour long sessions of open space each day. And we had an opening and a closing each day, so it ended up being about 5 hours, but it worked out really well from an energy perspective in terms of how people felt and connected. So this is, oh, it's just, is it being slow because it's being read? So this was our day one agenda. We had all sorts of, I talked about SSI, deepfakes and biometrics was a really intense session that went very well. So we did this all 3 days, and then Jack is going to go into some of what we covered. Here are his slides. We had and we had three sponsors.
That's perfect. That's great, Kalia.
Yeah.
And then Kalia is going to wrap up with something on Medium for all, everybody can see the agenda for yourselves. If you can't get into Kiko chat there and you're in the 10. It's good. Thank you, Heather. And it's good to see many of you again. Coyote, I know you attended, so thanks for your participation and everyone else. So yeah, we had a great event, I think, and 50 plus registrants, attendees. That's the team that put it together there, and the sponsors the first time. Just to cover some of the highlights that I thought came from various sessions that I either attended or led or heard from. If you want to scroll up a bit, Kalia, on the...
No, yes, I can, but just one second.
No worries. I know it's a preview. You can open up in Google's slide or something.
Okay. There we are. Sorry. Scroll up. Down to the next. There we go. Okay. Yeah.
Does that work? There we go. Perfect. We had a vast presentation or participation from many people across, not just technical, but civil liberties. Dina here was from Elector Labs, and she actually used to work at Consumer Reports. And she had a perspective on, biometric devices. One of the conclusions that many came to was many of these devices are part of a vertical integration, right, where they have the device itself, an IoT device, and typically a supporting backend. But the backend company then may get bought out or not have adequate cybersecurity in place or encryption. And really, the group came to a consensus that the devices themselves and the backend should be separately certified, right? Almost like plugging electricity in, right? You have the backend for, storage, processing. She's actually worried about healthcare IoT. And the overlap with biometrics there, but there's not a lot of, there certainly isn't any certification or standards, right? These are all very proprietary vertical integrations at the moment. So, she's in that business, and that's one of the recommendations that came out of that meeting. Lots of work on liveness for different biometric modalities. So Stephanie Shuckers, she's at Clarkson University, and she's the director of the NSF CIDR. CIDR is the Center for Identification Technology Research, which is part of the National Science Foundation in the U.S. And Stephanie really had a lot of good things to say, particularly about the work later in the FIDO Alliance, that she's actually works closely with the FIDO Alliance and the Biometric Institute. Interestingly, lots of work was shown. Particularly, we thank Sumpreet he goes by Preet Arora at Visa on birth registration. So part of the United Nations Sustainability Development Goals, particularly 16.9, they talk about many aspects of future benefits, money, and so forth are going to depend on digital identity credentials of some sort. And the goal, the SDG 16.9 talks about, trying to increase the recorded birth registrations by 2030. That's that goal. So Sumpreet has done a lot of work on his, when he was at Michigan State University under Arun Ross, on infant birth registrations and different biometric technologies there. There's some work he cited in papers at ID for Africa with Anil Jain and Arun Ross. And we pointed to, this intersects with some of the identity binding work that the FIDO Alliance is doing in their ID and verification working group and the EKYC working group under the Open ID Foundation. The need for open source tools was another topic there, right? So there's a lot of proprietary tools out in different biometric vendors, although there are standards for storage and transmission of biometric templates and raw data. There are very few open source tools. Many of them are outdated and only work on single systems. I'm familiar with some of the fingerprint work. It's only like in C++ under Windows, some of the open source tools. But Tim Newman at Coworker really was championing the message to try to develop more open source tools. Kim Hamilton Duffy did not attend, but her work actually was referenced in several sessions on progressive disclosure during onboarding process, typically globally onboarding processes that require IDV and some form of biometric registry. You know, it's almost all or nothing in many cases. So, the work that Kim has done on progressive disclosure during onboarding came up in some sessions. And then finally, I think most importantly, even across technical developers, biometric scientists, and civil liberties folks, those were sort of the main populations of the attendees. There was a need for guidance at all phases of software development. So developers saying, you know, we've got a lot of challenges, and they span from privacy issues. These are the risks, you know, privacy, accessibility, inclusion, and diversity. And you know, what guidance can be given to developers during the software development process about what they need to be concerned about. And several items were discussed. Todd Gerke at ID 2020 thought maybe there should be something like a patterns for ethical use. That's a desirable there that doesn't exist. On the other hand, Dan Bockenheimer at Accenture brought up that UNHCR, the Biometrics Institute, and Accenture had developed guidelines for ethical use of biometrics. Jean Curault at the IO Foundation also mentioned attaching policy to particular technologies development steps. And then finally, I presented something that was developed as a part of really coming up with risk questions for this event itself about privacy, accessibility, inclusion, and diversity. And that got a lot of interest, and I will be posting that work, actually, hopefully by the end of this week, on the Thoughtful Biometrics GitHub repo. So those are just a series of questions organized. It kind of flips the coin around. Instead of talking about the biometrics themselves and the different modalities and their technical issues, you actually address centrally the privacy, accessibility, inclusion, and diversity aspects, and then the risks that different biometric modalities impact on those. And it really breaks things out, I think, a little more neatly, right, rather than being technically focused. So that's what that framework, and really it's just a series of questions now, and that was shared in the workshop as part of the risk questionnaire we put on the GitHub repo. So those are the highlights as I saw it. Kalia, back to you with the agenda of the Medium article.
Sure. Thanks. Am I unmuted? Yes. Okay. Reload the story change. Okay. So we've been using Medium as our sort of blog posting place. I know there's issues with that, but it was easy and we did it. I'll post a link. Maybe you can post a link into the thing. So here we posted the whole agenda with all of the topics. And then we also posted, we asked at the end of the day what people got out of the conference. So you can see, sort of for each, you know, a range of our participants, what the outcomes and, what they took away from the day. So with that, I think we're good, and we totally are open to questions, if folks have them.
Thanks, Clea. That was really great. Marcus, you're on the queue.
Yeah, thanks for the summary. I have a question for Jack. A few years ago at the, you had a really interesting Rebooting the Web of Trust paper on self-sovereign biometrics. I'm curious, based on the outcome of the conference, could you describe on a high level in just a few sentences, how do you see the relationship between DITS and biometrics?
Yes. So that was addressed to self-sovereign identity. I wrote a Medium article, Marcus, good to hear you again, building up to the event. And that is in the series of articles on the Medium under Thoughtful Biometrics publication. And it's entitled Being Thoughtful About Biometrics, right? So that was Clea's term, and I fell in love with it. It was a placeholder at first, but I really think it conveys the idea. And that article on being thoughtful about biometrics lays out a kind of 10-year window in three phases. And the last phase is self-sovereign identity and holding your own biometric credentials. So, Marcus, I'll refer you to that because that's sort of the big vision, right? Building up to right now, we kind of have local credentials, often unlocked, you know, like a vital-based credentials where they're unlocked locally, they're held on the device itself, right? But over time, this is expanding to ID verification steps. That's sort of phase two, where there's connection to federated systems. And then I see that as an inevitable phase, right? Because you've got the inertia of legacy systems and so forth, right? So I'm just being blunt in there. That's sort of phase two, but that has issues. Those will be resolved, in my opinion, on in that article in a third phase, right? And that's the end of this decade where it starts to talk about we're going to get, you know, credentials will become mainstream, tying, you know, associating them with within a verifiable credential, being able to proper binding and between the biometric credentials and, say, other verifiable credentials so you can prevent credential fraud. I think those are going to come hopefully sooner, but at the end of the decade. So I refer you to that Medium article, Marcus.
Thanks, Jack. We've got Adrian, and this will be our last question.
So, following up on that, the relationship between DIDs and biometrics, as I understand it right now, most of the templates, that is the term that I guess people use to link a biometric sensor to the digital world, are proprietary. Very few of them are in the public domain. And so I'm wondering if during the conference this was addressed, the issue of using publicly accessible or standardized templates as a way of including a biometric, like, for instance, a quantized photograph that could be hashed and yet was recognizable to a human person, to a human as being such, as a way of bridging between DIDs and DID documents and the biometric world.
Yeah, I'll address that. Surprisingly, there was not a lot of talk. Well, I should say there was a lot of talk of standards. Dan Bockenheimer at Accenture is just an encyclopedia of information. So it focused, Adrian, around the, mostly the existing, ITL formats, right? So there is, I have to refer to some of my notes, but, and you can contact me offline if you like, but there are, you know, biometric template storage formats that are supposed to be interoperable. Okay. So they're, and they're typically the NIST ITL, payloads, right? And they are cross-modality, right? So you can do face, iris, voice, fingerprint, right? I'm very familiar with the fingerprint standards, right? And those are for static storage and, you know, transmission, right? So those are very set. And those include raw, raw image, processed image like friction ridge for fingerprint, and then minutia, right? So, you know, not raw, but highly processed coordinate information, right? Say for fingerprint. So those are like type 14, 9, and 20, right? Respectively. Discussion, mostly everybody who was familiar with them just referred to those. And other people really learned a lot, both from myself and Dan, and others, and we referred to them via links that they could use. So I don't know if that helps or not, but there do exist standards for template storage and interoperable exchange.
Thanks for that. And with that, we're over. So we're going to conclude the meeting for today. We will have Manu and Brent and other folks talk next week about a mini celebration to talk about bid candidate recommendation. And thanks, everyone. Have a great afternoon.